grew more palpable. The finest combat troops, superbly equipped and specially trained for exactly this kind of mission, hadn't grabbed a single moment of shut-eye all night long. The deck of cards that was used to while away the time from one alert to the next had been gathering dust in a drawer of the duty room desk for almost 2 days. The usual joshing and banter had first given way to uneasy conversations in low voices and then to heavy silence, every man hoping to be the first to hear the echoing footsteps of the returning convoy. Far too much depended on it. Everyone at Sebastopol could handle a weapon, from a 5-year-old boy to the very oldest man. The inhabitants of the station had transformed it into an impregnable bastion, bristling with machine gun nests, coils of prickly barbed wire, and even anti-tank hedgehogs welded together out of rails. But this fortress station, which seemed so invulnerable, could fall at any moment. Its Achilles heel was a chronic shortage of ammunition. Faced with what the inhabitants of Sebastopol had to endure on a daily basis, the inhabitants of any other station wouldn't even have thought of defending it. They would have fled from the place like rats from a flooding tunnel. After tallying up the costs involved, probably not even mighty Hansa, the alliance of stations on the Circle Line, would have chosen to commit the forces required to defend Sebastopol Station. Despite its undeniable strategic significance, the price was far too high. But electric power was very expensive. Expensive enough for the Sebastopolites, who had constructed one of the largest hydroelectric stations in the metro, to order ammunition by the crate with the income earned from supplying power to Hansa and still remain in profit. For many of them, however, the price paid for this was counted, not only in cartridges, but in their own crippled and shortened lives. Groundwaters were the blessing and the curse of Sebastopol Station, flowing round it on all sides, like the waters of the Styx round Charon's fragile bark. They turned the blades of dozens of water mills constructed by self-taught engineers in tunnels, caverns, and underground watercourses, everywhere that the engineering exploration teams could reach, generating light and warmth for the station itself, and also for a good third of the circle. These same waters incessantly eroded support structures and gnawed away at cement joints, murmuring drowsily just behind the walls of the main hall, trying to lull the inhabitants into a false sense of security. And they also made it impossible to blow up the superfluous, unused side tunnels, from out of which hordes of nightmare creatures advanced on Sebastopol Station like an endless millipede creeping into a meat grinder. The inhabitants of the station, the crew of this ghostly frigate hurtling through the nether regions of the underworld, were doomed eternally to seek out and patch over new breaches in the hull of their vessel. It had begun springing leaks long ago, but there was no safe haven where it could rest in peace from its labors. And at the same time, they had to repel attempt after attempt to board their vessel by monsters from the Chertanovo and Nakhimov Prospekt stations, creeping out of ventilation shafts, percolating through drains with rapid streams of turbid water erupting out of the southern tunnels. The whole world seemed to have ganged up against the Sebastopolites in a bitter determination to wipe their home off the map of the metro. And yet they clung to their station obdurately, as if it were all that remained of the universe. But no matter how skillful the engineers of Sebastopol Station were, no matter how experienced and pitiless the soldiers trained there might be, they could not effectively defend their home without ammunition, without bulbs for the floodlights, without antibiotics and bandages. Yes, the station generated electric power, and Hansa was willing to pay a good price for it. But the Circle had other suppliers too, and resources of its own, whereas the Sebastopolites could hardly have held out a month without a flow of supplies from the outside. And the most frightening prospect of all was to be left without ammunition. Heavily guarded convoys set out to Serpukhov Station every week to purchase everything that was needed, using the credit arranged with Hansa merchants, and then, without delaying a single hour more than necessary, they set off back home again. And as long as the world kept on turning, and the underground rivers flowed, and the vaults erected by the metro's builders held up, the order of things was expected.